Hello and welcome to the Vermilion Sports Show on KRVS 88.7 FM. I am your host, Louis Prejean. I am joined by the Vermilion Sports writer, Charles Long. Charlie?
Hope everyone had a happy Mardi Gras.
Did you?
It was a good one for me, yeah.
Well, so what'd you do? Do you go to any parades?
Yeah, I went to Zulu this year for the first time ever in New Orleans.
How was that?
It was a lot of fun. I caught some coconuts. It was a good time.
I didn't go to any parades, to no one's surprise.
Okay.
I stayed home and watched Netflix. That's what I did. I watched...
Hey, whatever, whichever way you choose to spend your break, it's all good.
I watched Good Girls. Have you heard of Good Girls, Charlie?
Have not heard of Good Girls.
Good Girls is actually a good show. That's my review.
Hey, there you go.
Thank you. I've watched 8 episodes now. I think I watched about 4. So each episode is about 42 minutes. I'm trying to do the math. It's about like 3 hours. It's about three hours I spent.
I'm kind of on a Netflix grind right now. Better Call Saul season 4 just got released, so I'm trying to catch up because season 5 is coming out weekly now on AMC. So now that season 4 is on Netflix, finally I can catch up. So I'm a couple episodes into that.
Well, I don't know, Charlie. A real Better Call Saul fan would have watched season 4 weekly as well, and then would have waited until Netflix dropped.
I didn't even watch the first 3 seasons until after season 4 come out.
Really?
Yeah, I watched all season 1 through 3 on Netflix after season 4 had already come out. So I've been waiting for season 4 to come out on Netflix for a couple months now, and it's finally up. So it's very exciting.
Well, I love Breaking Bad. I think it's a great
Breaking
show.
Breaking Bad is very good. I think Better Call Saul may be better.
Really?
Yeah, spicy take there.
It's super spicy take. I haven't given Better Call Saul a real shot yet.
It's very, very fun.
I think I've watched maybe 2 episodes, so it's not a real shot or a real chance I've given Better Call Saul, but after hearing that, Charlie, I may have to go check it out.
Yeah, it's got my stamp of approval.
And that's all you need, really, is Charlie's stamp of approval. Watch any movies lately in the theaters?
I did. Just yesterday I went and saw Parasite in theaters.
Oh my God.
I saw it in black and white. It was a lot of fun.
You saw it in black and white?
Yeah. The Britannia Theater in New Orleans, shout out, one of my favorite theaters ever.
Jeez.
Was showing Parasite in black and white, the black and white cut. I didn't even know that existed.
Me either.
Until I had seen it. And it was, it really makes you respect the movie as well shot as it is a lot more. And it gave me a lot more background into why Bong Joon-ho won Best Director at the Oscars.
Wow.
It was fantastic for that movie.
An experience like that is something you definitely have to do when you have that chance, you know.
Yep.
And I'm super glad you did it because I they don't have anything like that down here, as far as I know.
Shout out to the Britannia.
Shout out. And I wanted to go see the Titanic in theaters, but missed out on that. I haven't seen the Titanic, Charlie. Should I go watch the Titanic?
You haven't seen it, period?
No, period. I've seen scenes.
I think I've seen it once. I don't really remember. It may have been a while ago.
I mean, we meme it to death, so.
Yeah, we do.
It's kind of like, should I watch it, or, I don't know, should I just let it be a meme?
Is it on brand?
is it on brand for me to go watch Titanic? Parasite in black and white sounds really cool, so I'm really
awesome.
Happy you did that. I'm glad you skipped out on Sonic the Hedgehog to go watch Parasite in black and white.
Believe it or not, I think that was the first foreign language film that I've seen in theaters.
Nice. I wish I saw Roma in theaters. I heard that would have been great.
That would have been fun.
Wish I would have saw that, but I will be going to the theaters this weekend, Charlie, so stay tuned for a review next week.
Yep, I'll be looking out for it.
I'm going to see The Invisible Man, so there you go.
I've heard good things. I might go see it too.
Me too. How about you go watch it? I'll go watch it, and then we'll come back on here and give an official review. Justin will be back on next week. He's out this week on the Vermilion Sports Show. Justin will be in the dark completely on The Invisible Man. I mean, I know Justin doesn't go to the theaters anyway because he just loves Pixar movies. Mm-hmm. Hey, we should let him know that a new Pixar movie is coming out. We should let him know. Onward, I believe, is a new Pixar movie that's coming out next week. So we're going to have to let Justin know. But no Justin this week on the Vermilion Sports Show on KRVS. But we're going to talk Raging Cajuns athletics. We're going to talk about the New Orleans Pelicans. And if we have time. Because we will probably go long on the New Orleans Pelicans, let's be honest.
We love our Pels.
There's a lot to talk about, especially since we missed last week. There's a lot to talk about. A lot to talk about. Charlie, you're going to have to help me catch up. I'm going to miss some things. So you're going to have to help me catch up. And if we have time, we'll talk about the NFL possibly expanding to 17 games in a regular season and dropping to 3 preseason games as well. And only having, what, 1 seed in each conference? 1 bye in each conference for the number 1 seed.
Playoffs to 7 teams in each conference and 14 teams overall. What they're kind of proposing right now.
But if we have time, we'll get to that. And if we have time, we'll get to Joe Burrow's tiny hands. So you never know what we're going to talk about. But right now, we're going to talk about the Raging Cajuns baseball team. Oh, boy.
Yikes.
Yeah, where do we start on this one? So the Cajuns, let's set the groundwork here before we kick it over to you, Charlie. So the Cajuns baseball team is 2-7, currently on a 3-game losing streak. But what's kind of unexpected is they're 1-7 at home to start the season. They had a bunch of home games, and their only road game that they've played in, they've won. They beat Southeastern. Yeah, they beat Southeastern Louisiana 9-6 after they lost on opening night to Southeastern Louisiana. So it was a little bit of a revenge game there. But their only road game that they've played in is the one they've won. So that's interesting. They've won one home game, a game that I covered. So maybe I'm the good luck charm. I'm not exactly sure. But that was the Friday night game against Virginia Tech, where Connor Angel really balled out there. But, man, the Cajuns baseball team, off to a rough start, Charlie. And what are the reasons why they're off to a rough start?
I feel like every year that I've covered this team in recent, the past 2 or 3 years, they've always kind of gotten off to a tough start, but for different reasons. A lot of times it's been, kind of poor pitching, and a good offensive play hasn't really been able to pick up wins for them. It hasn't been enough, at least. This year it's been pretty much the opposite, where there's been a lot of good pitching performances. There's been a couple of outlier games, of course, last night's game against Northwestern State and the first weekend against Louisiana Tech. There were 2 bad pitching performances by the Cajuns. But outside of that, the pitching has been really solid all year. It's just been the offense hasn't been able to get, clicking and get going, which has been really the most disappointing thing. Because last season we talked about how solid the offense was, if they could just get consistent play from the pitchers. And now this season comes around and pitching has been looking really great, especially with a lot of the transfers that the Cajuns have brought in. You already mentioned Connor Angel, who looks like a bona fide stud as an ace pitcher on a weekend rotation staff. But the offense just has been flattering early and often this season.
And even when they got a good hitting performance against Northwestern State, their pitching failed them.
So exactly.
That's not going to get it done. And they had a pretty good showing against Virginia Tech in the first game. Connor Angel, as I mentioned, he performed well. They got out of a loaded base situation in the eighth. Were able to get out of that. Virginia Tech made some errors in that one. But then the next 2 weekend games against Virginia Tech, they dropped. And then you go to Northwestern State. You got good hitting performance, but bad pitching. And here you are at 10-7. And I don't know, how many of these games were they actually in?
A lot of them, honestly. I think that the big issue, especially this past week, and we didn't get to talk about them last week, but this past weekend against Virginia Tech, it's disappointing because I feel like they really did outplay Virginia Tech in at least 2 of the games that they played. The second game was probably the most painful game of the season so far, where they just had, I believe, 16 strikeouts in that game and left 15 men on base. They had so many opportunities, so many different chances to bring a guy in. I think even in the ninth inning at the very end of the game, they had a shot with a runner in scoring position. They just couldn't bring him in. So, it's a disappointing weekend against Virginia Tech, and then it gets loaded on top of that with a poor performance against Northwestern State by the pitching staff. I think Coach Deggs has his work cut out for him with this team. I don't know how many people were really expecting. I think in his introductory press conference, he was talking about we have the players that we'll get the players to get to Omaha in my first year. I don't know how many people were really expecting that, but for the people that did, this is obviously a very disappointing start.
How easy is it to fix the batting issues?
I think Coach Deggs is a great offensive coach. He should be able to get them going in time. There's plenty of talented hitters on the team. A lot of them are just kind of off to an early slump, which is, you know, fine. They just kind of guys start getting it clicking later in the season. There's a lot of new pieces on this team that still need to mesh. Obviously, I talked a little bit about some of the pitchers and all the new pitchers that are on the team. But the lineup is so different from what it was last year. They lost so many seniors, so many great hitters that were a great part of why the team was – and they weren't great last year, but the offense was really solid. So losing all those hitters, it's been tough to kind of push guys into the starting rotation. A couple of bright spots, as I said, the pitching and the weekend rotation has been really solid for the most part. The bullpen there has a lot of depth. They didn't look great against Northwestern State last night. But early in the season, you can see that the bullpen might be a really solid strength for this team. And the defense has been pretty solid for the most part of the season, too. It's just been a couple of bad performances by the pitchers, and then hitting. When hitting doesn't allow pitchers to have any kind of breathing room, like if you can't make a mistake as a pitcher, there's so much pressure on you to throw a perfect game that there's going to be mistakes. You're going to throw a bad ball, and you're going to allow a hit. You're going to allow a clutch two-out RBI. And when that happens, because the offensive performance is so down and not, you know, they're not providing you runs, as soon as that happens, it becomes kind of a cascade of runs, and then you get down, and it's just it's a bad cycle to get into. So obviously, very unfortunate start this season. 2-7 wasn't exactly what I was envisioning, especially with all these home games to open up the season. I figured the opening weekend would be pretty tough, very emotional, with Coach Robichaux. I didn't figure we'd drop all three of those games. Picking up a game against Southeastern was nice, but then, you know, losing the weekend series against Virginia Tech and then losing last night, it's a real tough start to the season. And they really need something to get them going and something big for this weekend against Sam Houston State.
I was going to say there's a point where emotion plays a factor into the start for the Rage Cages baseball team, because you have that emotional opening weekend with honoring Coach Rowe. And then you kind of look at this weekend ahead, Sam Houston State, Deggs is going against his former team.
Right.
So there's a lot of emotion. I don't know what kind of emotion will be involved in the Sam Houston State series. I'm not sure. But there is still emotion going into this one. So I don't know, Charlie, can we be looking at another possible series loss for the Rage Cajuns?
Yeah, definitely. Sam Houston State has a very good program. Coach Deggs obviously helped build a really solid team over there where they made a super regional for the first time in the Southland team's history. So he helped really build that program up, and that's why I really trust him to really build the Louisiana program back up to what it was in years past. But I don't think that looking at this team, I think that they can improve as time goes, but getting off to such a poor start, it's going to be really hard for them to really make noise in any kind of postseason play or anything like that, at least for me. If the hitting really starts to get going and the pitching stays consistent or even gets better than what they are right now, they get some pitchers back healthy. I know Jack Burke has recently been pitching. If he gets back healthy, Austin Perrin still needs to come back. Those are two names that are familiar for Cajuns baseball fans. If they come back, then that could be a nice addition to the pitching depth. But I think that they still need to really kind of get the rotation, the daily starters down for the batting order and figure out where different players fit in different spots. Because Deggs has been moving a lot of players around in the batting order, and it's been kind of hard to stay consistent when you don't know where you're going to be hitting. So Deggs is just trying to find the spark and the players that really kind of fit together and work that can provide a lot of runs per game. It's going to take some time. As I said, there's a lot of new pieces on this team, a lot of new hitters especially. So I'm going to give Coach Deggs as much time as he needs. But this upcoming weekend against Sam Houston State, if this team wants to really kind of turn their season around after this really poor start, this is the weekend to do it.
Yeah, you wish it would have been a better start for the Raging Cajuns baseball team, but hey, you never know. They can turn things around against Deggs' former team. Now we'll go over to the Raging Cajuns men's basketball team, who got a win over Arkansas State last night inside the Cajun Dome.
Yeah.
77-74. Pretty good win as they jumped Arkansas State in the standings in the Sun Belt Conference. So pretty good win for the Ragin' Cajuns. They got off, speaking of slow starts, to a slow start in the first half where they only scored 25 points and they only made 9 field goals. They shot 3 of 17 from 3 in the first half. But then things just turned around in the second half. Things were said in the locker room, I guess, at halftime. I don't know what was said, but it had to be pretty incredible because the Ragin' Cajuns scored 52 points in the second half and got the win over Arkansas State. Some big takeaways, P.J. Hardy and Cedric Russell were awesome in that game. Charlie, here we go. The Ragin' Cajuns coming down the stretch. They got a pretty good win against Arkansas State.
Yeah, definitely. We're coming to the end of it, and it was a really good bounce-back win, in my opinion, especially after losing a tough one to UL Monroe on the road. So coming back home and getting a big win against Arkansas State, they're still in contention to make the playoffs or the Sun Belt Conference, and that's all they really need to go for at this point. Definitely big win, big game by Cedric, as you were talking about. We were expecting a lot from him going into the season, probably unfairly. High expectations for Cedric, but he had a really nice game last night, and hopefully he can have a nice couple games to close out the regular season.
Yeah, he had 3 points at halftime, but 19 in the second half. But more importantly, he only had 2 threes on the night. But one of them was from the top of the key in the final minute that gave them the lead. So Cedric Russell came up clutch for them, and then P.J. Hardy, all 6 of his field goals were threes. I think
we always talk about a shooter's confidence, right?
Right.
When a shooter is, you know, 1 of 8 or whatever Cedric was going into that last three that he shot that gave him the lead, he takes it from the top of the key. He's feeling confident, even though he's had a tough shooting night, and he drills it. And that was awesome to see from him.
That was awesome to see, and it was a great shot from Cedric. It was so confident, like you said, and that's important for a shooter, is confidence. And that's what they talked about post-game. Marlon talked about it post-game. P.J. Hardy and Cedric Russell talked about just being confident in themselves. And P.J. Hardy, 6-12 from 3. So he took some ill-advised shots, let's just say. But the fact that he was confident enough to shoot them and recognize that people needed to score for the Ragin' Cajuns, and if it was going to be him throwing up 12 threes, it will be him throwing up 12 threes. Because he is a good shooter, and he recognized that he's confident enough that I'm going to take threes in this one, I'll make 6, and then be the second leading scorer on the Cajuns. So they kind of survived Arkansas State. Arkansas State was up 14 in the first half, and Marcus Eaton had 28 points for the Red Wolves. And there was a questionable call at the end where Eaton shoots a 3 at the buzzer, and it looks like he got fouled. It really looked like he got fouled on the final play, but the lights go out, and the Cajuns just run off the court celebrating. So shout out to the lighting guy, I guess, for shutting off the lights. But, Charlie, is Cedric Russell the guy? Does he need to be the guy for the Ragin' Cajuns coming down the stretch?
I think so. We talked a little bit about consistency. And when you're a shooter and you're relying on your shot to be falling to be scoring majority of your points per game, that's always kind of tough to stay consistent, and that's been an issue with Cedric this season. But 22 points is a good little start to this last little stretch. Next up, they're playing at Little Rock, the top team in the conference, and they haven't been good on the road this season. Most of their wins have come at home. They're actually 3-10 in true neutral or true away games.
Right.
So going on the road and playing the top team in the conference when you haven't been good on the road all year is a tough little matchup. But then they come home for senior day next this upcoming Tuesday against Coastal Carolina, who's also 7-11 in conference play, which is a very good opportunity for them to maybe pick up a win and split the last two games of the series and make it into the postseason for the Sun Belt Conference tournament.
And if they jump Coastal, I believe they'll host a game.
I think so too, because Coastal, you know, they haven't played yet this season. They've actually played Little Rock already, and they gave Little Rock a very good game at the Cajun Dome. They only lost 66-69. So that could be a pretty decent game. I just don't have very much confidence going on the road. But then hosting a team that's also right there in contention in the playoffs with you, hosting a team on senior day, the final game of the regular season, potential to maybe get a first-round host, that's going to be a huge game for Cajun's basketball.
Yeah, it's a pretty big game, especially that final game. And I know a lot of people are ruling the Ragin' Cajuns out against Little Rock because Little Rock is the leader in the Sun Belt Conference. They are 19-9, 13-4 in the Sun Belt. But Charlie, let's go back to the historic season for the Raging Cajuns, where they won 27 games. You remember that final home game, who they lost to, right?
They lost to Little Rock.
Little Rock on Senior Day. Marlon talked about how they're hoping to catch Little Rock a little distracted. A little distracted on Senior Day. And if we remember, we did not expect Little Rock, who was a six-win team at the time, right?
Right. Five or six.
Six-win team coming into the Cajun Dome against a historic Raging Cajuns basketball team. And Little Rock was able to pull it off in overtime. I mean, could we kind of see the Cajuns do that to Little Rock this weekend?
Maybe. I don't expect it. As I said, they gave Little Rock a very good game earlier in the season. They gave them a good scare and a tight three-point contest. But that was also at home, where they've been significantly better this season.
Right.
On the road, it's going to be tougher for me to say yes. I think that they probably lose that game. Then it comes down to Coastal for playoff positioning, because I think that that Arkansas State game, to come back and win that, pretty much puts them in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
With the two teams that are only behind them being at five wins in the conference, with ULM and Troy. So I think the Cajuns are pretty much settled. They're just playing for positioning at this point. And a game, if they beat Little Rock, that'd be great. But I'm not expecting it. I'm expecting them to more show up against Coastal and potentially pick up that game against a team that shares their record at 7-11 in conference play.
I'm not expecting it either. I'm not expecting a win over Little Rock, but you gotta. I don't want the Cajuns to kind of be like rule themselves out of the Little Rock game. I know they probably won't do that. I know they won't rule themselves out. I know. And just, like, rely on the Coastal Carolina game, that's not a good mentality. I know they won't do that, but just kind of what you don't hope to see on Saturday when the Cajuns play Little Rock. Pretty good game there. I'm not expecting anything from the Raging Cajuns. Exciting stuff down the stretch. I mean, the Cajuns have been through a lot. They've been through injuries.
Injuries, yeah.
They've been through player suspensions, and Tyrus Smith is currently suspended right now. They've gone through a lot this season, and they are in a position where they could host a game in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, where there was a point in the season that we thought they wouldn't make the conference tournament.
Right.
So it's a pretty good turnaround for the Raging Cajuns, Charlie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the low points for the Cajuns this season were definitely in December and in January, where I think they won only 2 of 12 games. They went on like a 2-10 stretch, and that was definitely the low point of the season. But they're starting to pick it back up. Late in the season, they're trying to make a run towards the conference tournament. And then once you get there, who knows what happens.
Yeah, you never know. Let's go to more basketball, Charlie. Let's just stay with basketball. Good old hoops. You got to love it. The New Orleans Pelicans. 10th in the Western Conference right now. There's a lot to catch up on. And this is where I mentioned at the top of the show that there is going to be stuff I missed, because we missed last week and there was a lot going on since then. So let's try to break it all down here. The Pelicans right now are 10th in the Western Conference at 25-33. They are 3 games back of the Memphis Grizzlies, but there is a big just puddle of teams fighting for that 8th spot. You got Portland, who's 2.5 games back. The Kings are only 3.5 games back, and the Kings have won 3 in a row. So you got to keep an eye out on them. And then the Spurs, I'm not really worried about. The Spurs have been trending downwards lately, and they're only 3.5 games back. So really, you're looking at the Blazers, Kings, and Spurs, along with the Pelicans for that fight in the 8th spot. Pretty cluttered there. Let's talk about how the Pelicans have been playing, though. So
sure. The
Pelicans, let's go back to, I mean, they beat the Trailblazers 128-115. Then they beat the Warriors 115-101. And then they lost to the Los Angeles Lakers. So let's talk about the 3-game road trip for the New Orleans Pelicans. We'll start with the Trailblazers game, Charlie. I mean, no Damian Lillard in this one. He was out with that groin injury that he suffered before the All-Star break that kept him out of the three-point contest and kept him out of the All-Star game, kept him out of this game against the Pelicans, and the Pelicans were able to pull off the win. It's something about the Blazers, Charlie, that the Pelicans just love playing them.
Yeah, and that's always great to have that one team on your schedule that you play a couple times a year that you just kind of own them. That's what the Pelicans did with the Blazers this year. Every single game it felt against them, the Pelicans had a significant lead and won by double digits. They just had their number this year, and some teams just don't match up well with other teams. I think the Blazers are obviously having an off year, but they have solid players all over the court. And I think even with Damian Lillard in this game, I still think the Pelicans would have figured out a way to win it. I will say this, though. I think the Blazers are probably the team that scares me the most with the 8 seed. With how the Pelicans are playing right now, I think they'll probably get it eventually. They'll get up there, especially with how they end the season, with 14 of their 15 final games coming against teams below 500. I think that the Blazers are probably the one team that really kind of scares me. I think the Grizzlies are kind of showing that they're starting to fall off now that they're playing tougher competition. And I think the Kings, you know, you talked about the Kings recently. They're on a 3-game winning streak, which is kind of funny that I think they vaulted the Spurs, which Yep. Who would have really expected that going into the season, especially after how they've been playing. But maybe Harrison Barnes will get to shave his beard eventually when they get back up to 500.
He's pulling old Dirk?
I don't really know. I think the Kings are probably the weirdest team in this mix. You can probably expect the Grizzlies, as I said, to kind of fall off a little bit. They're a young team. They'll be great in a couple years. But they're playing the tough competition that the Pelicans have to play early in the season. And the Pelicans are on the rise up. Their sweep over Portland is honestly the biggest thing for me. Because, as I said, if Portland is the one team that's really going to be competitive with them for that last spot, the fact that they won all 4 games against them, they own the tiebreaker against them, that's going to be huge if it comes down to a couple games at the very end of the season. That win over Portland, sealing the sweep and getting a game up on them was really big.
Just really quick on Harrison Barnes. We remember the story about Dirk not shaving until the Dallas Mavericks, was it got back to 500 or was it make the playoffs? I think it was getting back to 500.
Yeah. Something like that.
So Harrison Barnes is doing the same thing, saying he won't shave or cut his hair until the team hits a 500 record. Let's look at it right now. The Kings, looking at the standings, they are, 9 games below? Yeah, 9 games below 500. So
they got. Yeah, when he said it, they were somewhere around 12 or 13 games below 500.
Oh.
So everyone was calling them crazy. But now the team, I guess, is hoping that he can shave his beard, so they're trying to get up there.
Well, the Pelicans need to get on this. They need to not shave at all. Like, their beard, they need to just let the facial hair grow out, if that's the case, because apparently it has, like, some kind of powers. Another thing on the Kings, they play the Thunder tonight.
Yep.
Thunder have been great.
Have been great.
But then it's a back-to-back for them as they'll travel to Memphis to play the Grizzlies. Pretty significant game if you're a fan of the Pelicans and you're looking out in that playoff positioning. Pretty big game. But yeah, the Pelicans just have the Trailblazers number. The way Utah Jazz has the Pelicans number, it's kind of that deal.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
The Utah Jazz are so frustrating.
They're frustrating. they're frustrating for Jazz fans right now because who knows what they're doing. You remember
Donovan Mitchell doesn't get help.
The report that came out yesterday where they said they were pulling Mike Conley out of the starting lineup.
Right.
And then a couple of hours pass, and they're like, well, actually, no, it's Joe Ingles that's going to get pulled. How weird is that?
He went back home and, like, took a nap or something, and then they let him know that he wasn't actually getting pulled from the starting lineup.
What?
Yeah, a lot of Jazz fans are saying that it was a mistake to trade for Conley, which a lot of media members, and, you know, even myself included, I thought Conley would have been a perfect fit.
It's a great trade.
I thought it would have been perfect. I thought that would have probably vaulted them to a top 3 seed in the West this year. I think I had them around 3 seed preseason. But he just hasn't really fit. He hasn't meshed well with that team. And Donovan Mitchell is still being asked to do a lot for that Jazz team. And when it comes down to it, I think once we get into the playoff talk, which is coming up within, you know, the next couple of months, I think the Jazz are going to have the same issues that they've run into within the past couple of years, where they've made the playoffs, but they haven't really gotten past the second round because they don't have that great secondary scorer that can really assist Mitchell.
I'm looking at, I think you had the Jazz as the 3 seed preseason.
I think I did, too. And let me go check my notes.
Look, I don't want to just be prisoner of the moment, because that Mike Conley trade at the time was a great trade.
It was.
The Jazz didn't give up too much. The Jazz didn't give up all that much to trade for Mike Conley. It seemed like Mike Conley's an all-star. It seemed like, and he's almost a perfect complement to Donovan Mitchell. So it seemed like this was going to work out, and it hasn't so far. Now, don't get me wrong, the Jazz are still in the playoffs, but they just really haven't played well, and their experiment, at least for one game, of taking Ingles out of the starting lineup didn't work. They lost to the Celtics by 11 points, and Ingles played 26 minutes and only had 2 points. It didn't work. It didn't work, at least for that game. And right. Also, Bogdanovich can't have 3 points in 34 minutes. That can't happen either. So Utah Jazz have something to figure out. But shout out to the Utah Jazz. You do have the New Orleans Pelicans number, and that is very frustrating. You want to talk about
every call in the book at the end of game if it's Rudy Gobert at the rim?
Yeah. Oh, God. You want to talk about other frustrating things? You want to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers playing the Pelicans?
Sure, we can talk about that game.
Yeah, you don't see. You seem pretty optimistic about it.
I was, honestly. The Pelicans dug themselves in a couple of big holes in this game against the Lakers, and they were able to get out of it twice, even taking the lead, you know, late in that game.
Mm-hmm.
But to see them kind of blow it at the end was a little disappointing. They just couldn't hit the big shots. They couldn't get the clutch shot. What was very impressive for me was Brandon Ingram in that game.
Right.
He looked in his first couple games against the Lakers. He was off in both of those games. He didn't play very well. But to see him finally go off, and I think 11 of 18 shooting that night, and he had 34 points in the game. He had a really big game against his former team. So that was really nice to see him kind of break through after he had really struggled against the Lakers in earlier in the season. So that was nice to see. I think Zion and LeBron is what everyone was hoping for. But Brandon Ingram had a very nice, quiet 34 points, and I thought he was very efficient, effective, knocking down some tough shots. He looked like a player that we should max out at the end of the season.
And, I mean, LeBron James just decided to just remind everybody. He didn't even need to remind anybody who he was. We know what he's capable of. It's not like he's washed. Hashtag washed king, Charlie. Hashtag washed
king. Washed king. Yeah, in the league in assists.
Washed king. Who called him washed to where he started that hashtag?
I don't really know.
I don't know. I like LeBron.
It's putting a chip on his own shoulder, I think.
Yeah, I don't mind it. But he had 46 and 8 against the Pelicans. I was thinking about this. Does LeBron shoot? I think he averages like the most threes like against the Pelicans. I feel like he just decides he wants to shoot a lot of threes against the Pelicans. I don't know.
Yeah, he caught fire. But he was throwing them up and knocking them down.
Great performance by LeBron James. Also, hey, help Drew Holiday out.
Yes,
send help. Jeez. Look, if there was anything against Gentry in that game, it was him not sending help for Drew Holiday.
Drew so many times in a one-on-one against LeBron, and every single time LeBron took advantage of it, it felt. I think Drew's a great defender, but he's so undersized. It's like, I remember in the playoffs against the Warriors a couple of years ago, when we kept trying to put Drew on Kevin Durant, and Durant would be able to get his own space and knock down the mid-range and the jumpers that Durant is so well known for, just because he had such a significant, you know, size advantage over him. And that's kind of what it felt like with LeBron that last night, where he had the size, he would take him into the paint, or he would pull back and shoot a three, and Drew just couldn't really do much about it. Pulling over secondary help when we play them again on Sunday is going to be definitely a point of emphasis. I'm sure that Gentry is going to be having to look at for having to defend LeBron, because I think they did a great job on Anthony Davis.
They did.
AD, I think, was only 6 of 21 in the game.
He was.
Zion especially. I've read that in 1v1 matchups, I think Zion held AD to 0 for 4 and a turnover. So Zion did a great job on AD, which is what I'm sure Pelicans fans all over are very happy to see. But just being able to double LeBron when you need to, a lot of their players, their role players, hit the big shots that they needed to late in that game. Danny Green comes to mind, even KCP comes to mind. KCP is one of the funnier stories, I think, this season.
Yeah, he's playing well.
He really is. And I've seen Twitter talking about how Lakers fans really bullied KCP into being a really solid role player. Because going into the season, there was a lot of stuff that was making fun of his contract. I know they recently added Markieff Morris. So now they have a really solid group of role players. The Lakers are a deep team. There's a reason they're the one seed in the West. And I think that the Pelicans, that the fact that they were able to kind of take in all this hype coming into this game of Zion and LeBron's first matchup, and to be able to keep it close, keep it a tight game, come back after the Lakers had punched them in the mouth a couple times, and really make it come down to the wire where the Lakers were just able to hit the big shots and the Pelicans weren't, I think it's definitely kind of, if any team is going to give the Lakers a series, any team out of, you know, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans, the Trailblazers, and the Kings, even the Spurs, if any team's going to give that Lakers team a good series, I think it's going to be the Pelicans.
I think the Blazers might be able to give them a good series with a healthy Blazers team.
Potentially, I just don't think – I think that Hassan Whiteside is probably going to get abused by Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard in that series.
Well, I think they could get Nurkic back too.
Is Yusuf Nurkic supposed to be coming back for the playoffs this year?
I heard reports that he was on track to return later this season. So, I mean, that's a big piece for them.
Little boost for them trying to make. As I said, the Trailblazers are the team that worries me the most. The 8 seed right now. It's not the Grizzlies. It's not the Spurs. It's not the Kings. It's the Trailblazers. So having that 4-game sweep over them this season, having the tiebreaker, is going to mean a lot in the long run. So basically, every Pelicans fan is going to be having to do a scoreboard watch every night, watching those teams that are trying to compete for that final spot in the West, and rooting for the teams that they're going against. So for the next couple nights, a lot of Pelicans fans are going to have to be Thunder fans, which we'll have to hope that they can come through for us.
Yeah, I mean, just a lot of takeaways from that Lakers game, really.
Definitely.
A lot of takeaways. Please send help on LeBron. They definitely have an issue with those kind of players, those small forwards with size. But also, I mean, Gallinari's not the quickest guy, but he had a good game when the Pelicans played the Thunder. Yeah, see, it's those kinds of guys, you know, that destroy the Pelicans. We don't have anyone that can really guard that. So they're going to have to figure that out. Maybe a Kendrick Williams coming back might be able to help. Kendrick Williams might just be a body to throw out onto somebody at this point. A lot of takeaways from the Lakers game. Now they'll play the Cavs and then the Lakers again on Sunday. But the Cavs, Charlie, I think they've won 4 of their last 6. So
yeah,
the Cavs. You worried about the Cavs? Huh? The fire. They make some decision with their head coach. He gets fired, steps down. They move him to a different position, whatever it may be. Cavs are actually playing okay now. So, I mean, I'm still not exactly worried about that Cavs game.
They listened to us making fun of them 2 weeks ago.
We
were making fun of Colin Sexton.
What did we do? We inspired them.
We awoken the beast in the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And then they will beat the Pelicans, and that will ultimately ruin. Oh, dang. I actually think we might have just done something.
God.
I regret that. But, yeah, the Pelicans are 3 games back, and they can really make up some ground because the Grizzlies have a hard remaining schedule. Also, they lost their second leading scorer in Jaren Jackson Jr., and then they lost Brandon Clark for 2 weeks. So both of those guys are out for 2 weeks for the Memphis Grizzlies. And you can kind of see, look, when they have to play good teams, they're not very competitive right now.
Right.
They got blown out by the Rockets. Man, they got blown out by the Clippers. Like, I watched...
That Clippers game wasn't even close.
I watched that Clippers game. The Clippers looked really good in that one. But, man, watching the Rockets do it as well, then I know they were slight competitive against the Lakers. But the Grizzlies, I want to know their record against over 500 opponents.
The Grizzlies look like a young team that's still a couple years away from being a really solid team.
And
I think next year maybe is the earliest that they could be a really, you know, solid playoff contender. But this year, they're in the eighth seed right now. But the only reason they're right there is because of the Pelicans' early season woes and injuries and how poorly they started off the season. So I think that the Grizzlies, solid team, they're still a ways off. They're still very young, but they have a very bright future.
All right, so moving on from the Cavs, think of it like this, Charlie. So LeBron is out with a groin injury that Josh Hart, I believe, probably gave LeBron after LeBron tugged on him. Did you see that picture on Twitter?
I did see it.
And then I saw people
Rihanna
saying...
Rihanna was blasting him, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's got to hurt. Well, Josh Hart might have been the cause to that. And then you look at it, the Grizzlies play the Lakers on Saturday. LeBron's out for this game. But then the Lakers have to turn around on a back-to-back to play the Pelicans.
Right.
So the Lakers play the Grizzlies and the Pelicans. This is a weird time because you're going to have to root for the Lakers the night before.
Yeah, and Pelicans then, fans will have to root for L.A. to take down the Grizzlies. And then on a second night of a back-to-back, especially if they're not playing LeBron in the first night, if he's not playing in that game as well, especially after he was the main reason why they won against the Pelicans in Los Angeles this past week, I think that the Pelicans are going to be primed to have a shot at beating the Lakers and picking up their first one against them this season.
Do you think LeBron plays against the Pelicans? I think he does.
There's a chance. I think because he's not playing on Saturday, if I had to guess right now, probably. I hope he doesn't, of course. But there's definitely a shot. I think that he'll probably play maybe to try and push the Pelicans back a little bit. I don't think the Lakers want to see the Pelicans in the first round because that's obviously a very tough first-round draw with how the Pelicans have been playing. Mm-hmm. They're at 19-11 in their last 30 games, even having played some really tough teams like the Bucks and the Lakers and the Rockets. And they've been playing very well recently. So I don't think that the Lakers really want to see them in the first round. So that could be an opportunity for them to lose to the Grizzlies and have them kind of strengthen their bid for the eighth seed and then go ahead and beat the Pelicans. That's kind of conspiracy theorist, like me putting on my tinfoil hat, maybe, because obviously the Lakers will want to strengthen their hold on the number one seed in the West. But who knows? I think LeBron will probably play on Sunday, which will make it a fun game, but it'll absolutely make it a really tough game for the Pelicans to try and pick up.
Right. I think he plays on Sunday. So how are you feeling about the Pelicans' playoff hopes right now? Are you feeling optimistic?
I'm still feeling great.
Okay.
I think that if they still get through this stretch, with just a couple games out of the eighth spot, I think that they could. I've been saying it for the past couple weeks. I think they can go on a huge run at the end of the season. I'm still looking out for those last 3 weeks of the season where they play 14 to 15 games against teams below 500 for them to go on this giant run, kind of similar to what they did at the end of 2017, where they won, I think, 10 straight. I'm looking for something like that for this Pelicans team at the end of the season. They're getting hot. This team is really tight. They're playing really well. The assist numbers, if you look at how – we talked about how Gentry, for him to run his system, he needs a really solid pass-first point guard, and that's what Lonzo has been fitting like a glove into recently. Right. He's been playing excellent. Obviously, his shooting numbers weren't great against the Lakers, but still seeing some of the passes and some of the decisions that he's been starting to make while the Pelicans have been on their run, it's been really nice to see. And I think if those assist numbers keep going up, the Pelicans' scoring number is going to stay sky high, and it's just a matter of blowing teams out at that point.
Of course, the pace also comes with turnovers. The turnover problem is, I mean, that's the most frustrating thing about the Pelicans, and what could ultimately kick them out of the playoffs and in the playoff hunt is just turnovers. If they take care of the ball, they look incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
They look awesome because they have a lot of guys that can make shots. They have a lot of guys that can put the ball in the basket. But that turnovers prevent them from doing that. So it's a little frustrating with all the turnovers. So with the pace, it also comes with good ball movement, which the Pelicans are just moving the ball really well right now. But it also comes with turnovers, and that's the most frustrating thing. It's a gift and a curse, the pace that Gentry likes to play at. So it's about really just being smart with the ball, because some of these turnovers aren't a credit to the pace. They are not a result of the pace. Some of these are just ill-advised passes of not knowing where your guy is, and that could be some chemistry issues that, you know, inserting Zion just 12 games ago has. But dribbling the ball off your leg, throwing the ball out of bounds in like the half, in a half-court set.
Seen a lot of those.
There's been a lot of that. And those are turnovers that you can cut down because it's not dealing with Gentry's pace of play. It's about being a better disciplined team, and maybe they're getting there. We'll see what happens down the stretch. But limiting the turnovers is the biggest thing for the Pelicans,
right,
if they want to make the playoffs. There's no question about that. Also, make free throws, please. That's
I think the free throw shooting has been getting slightly better in recent times.
Yeah.
There's been a couple games, of course, where it's relapsed and they have had bad shooting nights from the free throw line. But I think it's getting better, especially with Zion. You know, at the start of the season, he was making like 30% of them in his first couple games. But you've seen him go 10 of 13, 11 of 12. He's getting to the line and he's knocking them down. So obviously he's been spending time in the gym working on his free throw shooting, which is really nice to see because that was a glaring weakness in the first couple games that he played. So getting down low, drawing fouls, getting the opposing big men in foul trouble, and then being able to hit the free throws, that's going to be a huge weapon for the Pelicans at the end of the season.
Zion's a fast learner.
He really is.
He's a fast learner. And
he's
special
player.
I think he recognized, I mean, he's already exceeding expectations. That's fair to say.
Right.
Any expectation that we had about it's already passed. And that's unbelievable when you think about all the hype that surrounded Zion, but he's already exceeded expectations, and then he's a fast learner. He recognized that free throw shooting was an early problem for him, and he's been shooting them better. He's been getting a little bit more air under the ball because a lot of them are flat.
Right.
A lot of his free throws are flat, so he's been getting a little bit more air, not like a ton. It's not like a skyrocket free throw form or anything like that. But he's a fast learner, and one example that I kind of remember was Carmelo Anthony hits the jab step against him, and he kind of turns Zion around. Then you go to the Warriors game just 2 days later where Zion hits his first three since his debut. That was on a jab step against the Warriors defender. So it's a nice parallel where Zion quickly learned, he's like, hey, because the Warriors defender is expecting him to drive left. But Zion hits him with the jab step, and he just pulls up from three. It was a confident move. And something he might have learned from Carmelo Anthony. So that was really nice to see. He's a fast learner. And, I mean, what can be said about Zion that hasn't already been said? I really don't know.
Kid is incredible. I think when we were talking about him in his first game and what our expectations were of him for this season, pretty sure we were talking maybe 16 to 18 points per game. He's over 22 points per game as a rookie. He's learning all these things. He's getting better at the free throw line. He's cutting down his turnovers. He's learning different things. He's basically solo bringing back the post move to the NBA.
Yes.
Whereas in the NBA is moving all towards small ball and shooting, Zion has been so dominant and such a breath of fresh air for old school NBA guys. He's going to be so much fun to watch as a Pelicans fan within the coming years. He's developing way quicker than any of us could have expected. And he's just proving all the doubters that said that this kid would be a bust because of his size wrong. He's just been fantastic, and I think that he's going to be a big reason why the Pelicans really can make that playoff push at the end of the season. I think everyone in the NBA, except for maybe the fans of the teams that are also competing, would love to see a Pelicans-Lakers first-round series. Even if it's a sweep, even if it's a five-game series, which if/when the Pelicans make the playoffs,
nice.
We're going to do our playoff predictions. We'll give our predictions and why. But if they make it, everyone's going to be excited for that series. It's probably going to be the most watched first-round series ever. Maybe probably the most watched series in either conference throughout the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think it would be so exciting to see Zion and like the old and the new with LeBron and Zion go up against each other in the first round. I can't imagine many NBA fans would not want to see that.
That would be incredible. Also, right now, if the playoffs started today, the Rockets and Thunder would play at the 4-5 matchup. That'd be pretty entertaining, too.
The Thunder have been the surprising team this year.
Yeah.
I think I had them around the 13th seed going into the season.
I mean, look, that's okay.
Shea Gilgeous Alexander, man, he's Chris, incredible.
Chris Paul too, like
Chris Paul is an all star.
We know about Chris Paul.
We know about Chris Paul, but SGA has really come on strong. I think he's averaging almost 20 points a game. Danilo Gallinari has fit that team very well. Steven Adams is having a solid season again. They have a lot of good players on that Thunder team that I underestimated, and they're proving a lot of people wrong by having their strong foothold. They're going to be in the playoffs this year. It's just about positioning for them.
Yeah. Shout out to the Thunder. There you go.
Yeah, we have bad things to say about the Cavaliers, but we have good things to say about the Thunder.
Yes, absolutely. Thunder, please beat the Kings. This will air after the game.
Please beat the Kings, and they're playing the Grizzlies too, right?
Yeah, I think they are, yes.
Please beat both.
The Thunder, no. They don't play the Grizzlies.
Oh, how about that?
No, they don't. They don't play the Grizzlies until March 17th. So, we can give, a little bit of an early, hey, please beat the Grizzlies whenever you play
them.
Give
us a hand, please.
Yeah, so March 17th, but mark your calendars for that one. Also, April 11th, they play the Grizzlies. So
day after my birthday.
Oh, nice. Happy birthday, Charlie. Early birthday. I just wanted to throw that out there.
My one last kind of comment about the Pelicans is I think that the early part of March is going to be a tough test for them.
Yes.
We talked about the Lakers rematch that they'll have on Sunday, March 1st. But then they have to travel and play the Mavericks. That's going to be a tough game. They're going to host the Heat, which I think is absolutely winnable. The Heat are a solid team. They've been great all year. But playing them at home, I think may give the Pelicans a little bit of an advantage because the Heat have been a lot better at home than they have been on the road.
Right.
Then they go to play the Timberwolves, who've been playing a little bit better recently ever since they got D'Angelo Russell. I think that's a winnable game. They go to the Kings, which is going to be a must-win for a team that's kind of come out of nowhere to try and get up towards the 8th seed.
Oh, and Charlie, the Kings games are so frustrating to watch, too.
Oh, yeah. That 4-game stretch where they travel to play the Timberwolves, the Kings, the Jazz, and then the Clippers.
Important.
Is going to be a really kind of interesting stretch. I think if they go 2-2 or even 3-1 in that stretch, they're going to be looking great for the playoff push.
Yeah.
Because then after that is the stretch that we've all been talking about, where we can't wait to see how the Pelicans really kind of roll away and beat some of this lesser competition and make their final run at the playoffs.
And Charlie, I don't want to overlook, you got the Hawks, but the 4 games after that, it's the Spurs, Grizzlies, Kings, Grizzlies.
Right.
Think about that.
Incredibly important, but they're all teams that are winnable games.
And the Pelicans, what they've proved, and we could kind of wrap up the Pelicans because we probably need to touch on the NFL expansion. But the thing about the Pelicans, they proved that they're better than the other teams they're competing for that playoff spot.
You look at both games they've played against the Grizzlies so far this season, they've blown them out. You look at all 4 games they've played against the Trailblazers, they beat them down. The only team that they've lost to out of that group is the Spurs, and that's in Zion's first game. That was before Zion's really kind of gotten acclimated to the system. He's a totally different player now than he was in that first game. So it's definitely going to be an interesting little stretch there. But as far as the first, couple weeks, first 2 weeks of March, that's going to be something for Pelicans fans to really look out for. And if they survive that stretch and play well, then it's going to be not necessarily smooth sailing, but the door is going to be open for them to take that 8 seed.
No, exciting times to be
a New Orleans
Pelicans
fan,
man. It looked dark when it was 6-22 and 13 game losing streak. Wait, what?
We were calling for the tank at the beginning of the
season. Yeah, we were calling for the tank. Not anymore, baby. Take-a-thon. Nope. I haven't opened take-a-thon in forever. So
yeah, give us that 8 seed.
Give us the 8 seed. We want it. All right, we got to touch on the NFL. We got about 4 minutes here to quickly touch on the NFL. They collective bargaining agreement. They want to increase the regular season to 17 games, shorten the preseason to 3, expand the NFL playoffs to 7 teams. One team gets a bye from each conference. So a lot of changes are going to be happening, maybe, because the players are really pushing back against this, Charlie.
Yeah, and that's what's been the big deal with it, is that players have all been kind of voicing their opinions. I know Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers have been probably the two most popular players to voice their protest and say that they're going to be voting no for the NFLPA. It's an interesting idea. I don't like the idea of adding a 7th team to each conference during the playoffs. That's my biggest deal. I think a lot of players are kind of upset I only read a little bit into it, but they're having some sort of pool of money that they're giving to teams to use for the final game of the season. It's a way that they don't have to add on to contracts, which is kind of odd for me, at least.
Yep, that's true.
So that's a major reason why a lot of players are kind of pushing back on it, is not only because it adds an extra week to the regular season, which adds an extra, like, 17 weeks, I mean, with one bye week, it's already a grueling schedule for NFL players. Adding an extra week obviously gives, you know, probably adds some more excitement towards the end of the season with teams that may be trying to play for that to get into the playoffs. But it also adds an extra week for potentially injuries and stuff,
right?
For a discounted rate, which is kind of odd.
And you got to think about how the teams aren't going to have an even 8 home games and 8 away games. They're going to have to play one at a neutral site.
Yeah, which is also very weird. I think that if they want it to happen, if they truly want their season to be expanded an extra week, I think cutting the preseason down a week is a good idea, actually.
I do. I like
that. 3 weeks is also is a pretty solid idea. Adding an extra week to the regular season, though, off of that is an interesting idea, but they just need to do it correctly. They need to be able to restructure contracts of players to be able to associate that amount of pay for an extra game each season. And then the playoff situation, I don't think they should even touch the playoffs. I think the playoffs are fine as is. I think they're actually perfect as is. If you go with what they're suggesting, the only teams that would have a bye would be the number one overall seed in each conference. And then the number two seed would have to play in the wild card round against the 7 seed, which is extremely punishing to a team that has played well all season and gotten the 2 seed. I understand wanting to have an extra wild card game, potentially. And in that format, you would have 3 wild card games in each conference, 2 divisional games, and then the conference championship game. But I just like it how it is. I like the idea of having the top 2 seeds get a bye in the first round.
Mm-hmm. I just don't think you mess with a good thing. You know, you don't fix something that's not broke.
Exactly.
That old cliche. It's fine as is. People are really enjoying the product of the NFL. People are still watching, and then maybe oversaturating the product just a little bit and having this weird 17th game might just be a little bit too much. A lot of factors go into it. Maybe we'll dive more into it next week here on the Vermillion Sports Show. But we got to wrap things up, Charlie. We didn't even get to Joe Burrow's tiny hands, you know, and how Joe Burrow was going to consider retirement.
We'll do that next week after the combine.
Yeah, we'll do it next week after the combine. And just a quick little guessing game. Do you know how big Drew Brees' hands are? If you want to guess.
10 and a quarter.
Dude, right, you're right on.
Hey,
how'd you know that?
Just off the top of my head.
No. Have you shaken his hand?
I have not.
I don't believe you. I feel like you high-fived him, and then you're like,
I've seen him in person when I was at training camp. I never shook his hand.
So you were, like, scouting him. Maybe you're, like, an AI. Maybe you're a robot, Charlie. You just, like, scanned him.
I did my measurements.
Incredible. Well, that will do it for myself and Charlie this week. Justin will be back on next week, but Charlie, thank you for talking sports with me. As always, I appreciate it. If you missed any part of the show, you can listen to it online at krvs.org. You can hear us talk sports every Friday at midnight, and programming on KRVS comes to you each week through the generous support of listeners like you and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. We'll be back with more, you know, hand-sized takes and all that. Just truly incredible stuff. And then we'll quiz Charlie on quarterbacks' hand sizes next week. So, as always, thank you.